All right, thanks for joining us. Today we're talking with Volunteer Darren, who is over here volunteering in Ukraine and has been for a little bit. So I want ask him to share a little bit about his background and where he's from and what brought him to Ukraine.
All right. So I'm from a small village called White Creek, New York. I like to say it's part of the greater township of Cambridge. I'm proud of both of those places. And about myself, I was a small-scale organic vegetable farmer up until this sabbatical year that I've taken.
Great. And we were talking earlier, and you mentioned about traveling and all that, and having a gap between what you did in college and to where you're here now. Tell me a little bit more about traveling and coming over here, thinking in the perspective of those people that want to come over and volunteer, and maybe that's one of their hang-ups is I'm scared to travel.
Yeah. So I was telling Shannon a little earlier before we were on mic that I'm a stereotypical over-planner, or used to be really bad at that, which it has its virtues, but it's not necessary for coming here. So my prior experiences with travel were that in university I did two different two-week study abroad experiences that kind of got me familiar with the basics. As someone from like a small town that barely left his own state, it was a great structure to get me used to the idea. But then the very first time I traveled abroad on my own, making all my own plans, I was that over planner. Like I said, I made sure that every volunteer opportunity was perfectly lined up, that they had sent a confirmation email that clearly stated I was ready. You know, I didn't know, are the border guard, you know, I was going to Europe,
right,
and I was worried, you know, are the border guards going to ask me what I'm up to, you know? And I had read all the, when you go online, you'll read about how difficult the questions could potentially be. And, you know, countries will check what's in your bank account to know if you're there. I've never had a single country actually do those follow-up checks to actually, you know, it's far easier to just come to a country, get a tourist visa, mm-hmm, and show up to your volunteer opportunities.
Awesome.
And if it doesn't work out, there's always a second place and a third place and a fourth place. You really don't need to overplan it that much.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Now, you were mentioning about sabbatical year, and specifically, what motivated you to come to Ukraine to volunteer?
I'm currently a member of NAFO, which is like the informal collection of people on Twitter/X who are foreigners from around the world mostly, and Ukrainians who have used Twitter as a tool to stay informed on the situation. So when the full-scale invasion, actually before it happened, in the weeks leading up, when Ukraine was in the news in America and the threat of invasion was being talked about, I was desperate for a good source of news and found that the mainstream media was giving me only a slice of the American picture of things. So using Twitter as a tool, I got informed on what was going on, and as the first week of the full-scale invasion played out, I wanted to stay informed. And
okay,
I think that being informed and having a conscience is what causes you to be involved in Ukraine.
Okay.
That's as simple as that.
I like
that.
You know,
you got to do something.
I like that. The first time I heard it, being informed and having a conscience. That's a nice pairing there. What were your initial impressions on arriving in Ukraine, and did you have any perceptions or expectations about coming here that evolved now that you're here?
Well, my very first volunteer experience was to find something in Poland. So I volunteered in Poland collectively over 7 months in the past sabbatical year. So a lot of the first perceptions were shattered because of Poland, I should say. Because both Poland and Ukraine are formerly communist countries, mm-hmm, whether they were in the Soviet Union or under Soviet influence. So I think a lot of North Americans in general come over to these countries with a 1980s level perception of these countries. Because if you're a second or third generation Polish or Ukrainian American, the last stories you hear of these places are under the difficult communist times. Mm-hmm. And maybe the last time your family traveled back was in the 90s or something. So I think we have very outdated views on what an Eastern European or Central European country will be like, or like a post-communist country.
Okay.
I think that all the people are going to be cold, reserved. And while it's true that there is a definite cultural difference, no one in Europe matches Americans for openness and smiling at you on the street and all these other things. But at the end of the day, Ukrainian culture is very open, very warm. And yeah, and I had the same experience in Poland, that the Polish people really warm up to you as well. And so yeah, abandon your prior views of what it's like to be in Poland or Ukraine or
all right.
In the theater, we'll say.
Awesome. Thank you for that. What kind of challenges have you faced during your time here, and how have you overcome them, regardless of how small?
So I think for me, it's a very silly first world challenge, but expats in general in any country will find that going shopping can be frustrating, because you are just a creature of your neighborhood and you know exactly where to go for what. You know, if I need a stick of deodorant, I know there's the Walgreens on the corner, or, oh, I'll just grab it while I'm at Walmart. You just know which products are where. And when you come abroad, it's just a little cultural difference to decide which products are stocked where. So, you know, you think you're going to buy some Band-Aids at a pharmacy, but the pharmacy has only prescription medications and a handful of non-prescription. And you're like, the pharmacy doesn't have Band-Aids? What the hell? So it's just little things like that, like finding that you didn't stop at the appropriate sized grocery store for the thing you wanted. You know, small places won't have peanut butter, but big ones will, or things like that.
I've experienced that too, and I actually remember kind of a little funny story made me think of this. I went to go buy bananas my first week or two here, and I'm used to in the States, you weigh the bananas at the register, they charge you. I didn't realize you had to get your own sticker here and weigh them beforehand. Yep. So I go to the register and she tries to explain there's no sticker on there, and I end up not buying them because I don't want to go back and figure that part out. So next shopping trip, I say, okay, let me try this out, weigh my own bananas and get a sticker. And I go up to the machine, and of course there's no pictures. It's all in Ukrainian language, and I have no idea which one's bananas. So I put the bananas back in. But now here I am, several months later, I'm at a point now where I can buy bananas comfortably.
I had that same experience too. Angry cashiers looking at me like saying something I didn't understand.
Yeah.
Ran off, and the whole line waited as the cashier did it for me.
What does a typical day or week look like for you as a volunteer?
Well, here in Lviv, it's kind of like a hive mind collective managed through WhatsApp groups that you typically get invited to once you're here and meet a few people. So the weeks can vary depending on the needs of the organizations. You know, someone will just put a message on the WhatsApp group saying, hey, we need more people to help make trench candles. And a few people will switch from their usual thing to go do that. But for me, my typical week is working 5 to 7 days a week, but I usually let myself work kind of a second shift. I sleep in till 10 in the morning, and then I go join some organization at 11 or 12 and work till 7-ish.
Great. Yeah. Awesome. Very cool. How do you maintain your mental health while volunteering in a war zone? And I say that knowing Lviv is further away from the east than a lot of other places, obviously. So, but still, you're in a conflict environment and daily air raid alarms and a whole new environment just from language and cultural area. So, how do you stay grounded for yourself?
I'd say this is potentially contentious, but as an American, I have to remind my family and friends back home that when I came here, I took my risk of dying of a mass shooting in Walmart down to zero. I took my risk of dying at a mass shooting at a concert. You know, there's a bunch of other risks that are now diminished because I'm here. And now, you know, if I'm in the wrong neighborhood at the wrong time, I could be a part of a rocket casualty event. So that is one form of mental health, to understand that just because it's a new risk doesn't mean that it outweighs all the other changes that have occurred by your choice. The changes that have occurred are like, you know, traffic deaths are different here. Murder rates are different. You know, they're actually lower. So in many ways, my chance of randomly dying from something is lower here.
Okay.
That's as an American, though. So it's this weird privilege to come from a place where the background risks are already high. So
yeah. Do you have any memorable moments during your time here that you care to share? Any specific incidences?
Just recently, I was working at a kitchen that makes dehydrated soups for the soldiers. And I was sitting at the sink washing some potatoes. And behind me was the big table of mostly Ukrainian ladies peeling carrots. And they just started, one of them started singing some folk song that everyone seemed to know the lyrics to. So the table slowly grew in confidence and started joining along in all these folk songs. And it was just a really touching moment because I know how Russian oppression of the Ukrainian language has been part of their strategy to co-opt the parts of Ukrainian history that they want for themselves and to eliminate the parts that are inconvenient. So all the pseudo-history, can I say the word bullshit on this
podcast? Yes, of course.
Yeah. The pseudo-historic bullshit of Putin where he's, like, talking about Kievan Rus. Like, he's going back 900 years to co-opt parts of what happened on Ukrainian, like, current modern Ukrainian soil for his own. And I'm sitting there at that table hearing these folk songs sung one after another by these women who are proudly carrying on the tradition that has existed for centuries, separate from, let's say, Muscovite history.
You're describing it, and I can just kind of feel that sense of community spirit there in, in the kitchen area as they're singing. That's very awesome. You mentioned Twitter and X earlier in the podcast. Are there any other sources that you stay in touch with to stay abreast of the current geopolitical environment of Ukraine outside the country? How do you, how else do you stay informed and keep your information shaped on a daily, weekly basis of what's going on with the conflict?
I'd say, I have to be honest, I think after my experience of seeing how the mainstream media would alternate between ignoring the Ukraine crisis or like pre-shaping U.S. public opinion to get ready to pull back from it, you know, just pull back from having it on the public conscious mind. After that experience, I largely rely on Twitter to find the people who then publish weekly articles within their spheres of knowledge. So, yeah, I use Twitter as a tool to find those people with their public outreach and then read their journals or articles. Those are military analysts who are presenting a more accurate view of what's going on. Sometimes it's more optimistic than what the U.S. media would say, like focusing on the successes of what happened last year, like 33% of Russia's Black Sea fleet firepower is now at the bottom of the Black Sea. So when all the talking points you hear are in CBS News and ABC is like Russia or, you know, Ukraine's failed counteroffensive, like they're misunderstanding that the war is a total and complete effort and that just because ground lines did not change as much as someone addicted to a flashy map would want, it doesn't mean that massive successes aren't being made and that it's an effort that has a chance to succeed and is partially succeeding, but needs our push to help.
Okay. So, kind of as a final question, then I just want to ask, what else? What else would you say to people who are, once again, sitting on the couch in the kitchen at home, they want to make that final push to come over and volunteer? What would you like to say to those people?
I'd like to go back to what I'd said earlier, that I was the ultimate reluctant traveler, the over-planning traveler who wanted everything lined up once upon a time, you know. But it's shockingly easy to come into a country at war as a civilian volunteer. Credit cards work, the public transport is on time, there are fewer strikes than in Germany or the UK. It works better than the U.S. because the U.S. public transport is nearly non-existent. So you'll actually find you're in, you know, if you come to a city, especially Lviv, you'll just find it's completely doable. You rent a place on Airbnb or Booking.com, or, you know, if you stay in country long enough, you find a local deal. Like, you start to follow the Facebook groups that let you arrange an apartment. You know, it's all very doable. It's not like some alchemy or unknowable science to come here and arrange a place to stay, buy food, go places, do things.
Awesome. Well, to everyone listening that are chronic over planners and have to have everything in place, you heard it from the expert chronic over planner. So yep, it's very doable. Come here, do it. There's connections here. There's, I like the word you used earlier, Darren, a hive mind of WhatsApp groups, Facebook, Twitter. So there's all sorts of resources here to get you connected. So thank you for sharing your experience here with us, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you.